Good evening. I'm William Cooper, and you're listening to the Hour of the Time, the only hour that ever was. Boy, there's one of those classic screw-ups that make live radio really fun. I'll tell you, I'll probably be making them 3 years from now if I'm still doing radio live, because this really isn't my cup of tea, but I enjoy it. It's a lot of fun. Coming to us now from Phoenix, Arizona, for our Monday Night Metals report is Gene Miller. Hello, Gene.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm having fun here. How you doing?
Well, I'm doing okay, and I just want to assure you, even though it may not be your cup of tea, you're doing a great job. I just want to encourage you, and when I talk to the listeners out there, I hear nothing but good things said about you, Will. So you know, I just want to tell you, keep up the good work.
Well, thank you, Gene. What's happening in the market?
Well, the market, gold went down $1 to $369.25. Silver pulled back about 3 cents to $4.42. The Dow was up considerably today, up $24 to $36.73. As I said last week, I look forward to maybe hit somewhere around the 3,700 range and then look for a pullback. The numismatic market is also strong, even with the pullback in gold. Here's a little bit down. Gold went up on the numismatic level, especially in the higher end pieces, 64 Liberties, 65 Saints, 67 Morgan, 66 Peace Dollars. The nicer pieces are still continuing to move up. One of the questions that I'm asked a lot of times, and I suppose anybody that deals in this, people want to know, where is gold headed? You know, they certainly don't want something that's going down, but then those people are really buying it for the wrong reason, and ultimately we're buying it for protection. But just to kind of answer some of those questions, I got a chart here I pulled out, just a recent one that came out in October, and it's in regard to jewelry demand in relationship to production. And in the last few years, from 1983 to 1992, in developed nations, gold jewelry demand has more than doubled, went from 450 tons to 925 tons. In developing nations like Southeast Asia, it even did more than that. It went from just under 400 tons in 1983 to almost 1,500 tons in 1992. And basically what's happening here is jewelry demand, as things begin to heat up, will take up more than 10%, or 10% more, I should say, than the entire world gold production. In other words, we're going to have a shortage. And anytime you have a shortage of some sort, obviously the price goes up. Another thing that I read here was at its peak in 1980, gold was selling at $850 an ounce, which was five times more the S&P 500 index. Today, for gold to match that, it would have to be selling for $2,250 per ounce to equal that 1980 level relative to the S&P 500. Bottom line is, folks, I think we're headed for gold or higher gold prices. And I don't know, some people are sitting around watching it and waiting it, and the fact remains, when this thing unravels and our economy totally goes berserk, you'll be running to wherever you can get gold from it, and you'll be chasing it up at such sky high prices, it'll be unbelievable. And it's like the old Fram oil commercial: you can pay me now, or you can pay me now later, but sooner or later you're going to buy gold.
Or you can pay me now.
Pay me now or pay me later, but he says you will pay me, and that's you know. It is true. You need to buy it while it's cheap, because with gold demand outperforming gold production, it's ultimately going to go higher. It's just been artificially suppressed. The lower interest rates are not going to stay down there forever. They're trying to, you know, jumpstart this economy, and as they eventually do, inflation will set in, and higher prices are bound to return.
Well, you know, it's interesting what you said, because several years ago I made a prediction, and I still stick with it, that when all this settles out, gold will stabilize at around $2,500 an ounce was my prediction, and I stick with that.
I don't think you're out of line at all, you know. And, hey, break my heart. If you want to buy that $25 an ounce instead of $370, I mean, break my heart. But I'd just soon, to be honest with you, you buy it now. And then chase it up all the way up to there. But believe it or not, there'll be people chasing it at that $2,500 level.
There always is, always was, and always will be.
Oh, yeah.
We know that. A couple
other things. Those of you that got in on the Peace Dollars and the Mint and the Morgan Silver Dollars, you're doing great. I just, before I left the office, called, made a phone call. I acquired 10 more of the Peace Dollars, Mint State 66 Peace Dollars. And again, I want to urge you, don't fall in love with these things. These are just for you to have a quick turnaround to go back in and buy 2 to 3 times as much bullion or silver or low-end numismatics to buy the stuff that really is going to help you down the road, you know, when the thing does collapse. But for goodness sakes, if you can take advantage of this, give me a call tonight. Tell me you want to, you know, let them know on the answering machine, because it's just an answering service answering it. Let them know you want to reserve one of those Mint State 66 Peace Dollars. Let them know that you're from William Cooper, and because the rest of the floor doesn't know about these yet. And so leave a message. If you have a broker already, talk to your other broker that you have. If you've already been talking to one, I don't want to get them all up and upset. But if I can help you anyway, I'll be more than glad to.
Well, thank you, Gene. And remember, folks, you get a number one service with Swiss America Trading, especially with Gene Miller, if you tell them that you listen to the hour of the time. When you call in, be good, loyal people, and thank them for sponsoring this program. And remember, call 1-800-289-2646. That's 1-800-289-2646. Sorry, Gene, didn't mean to cut you off, but I want to get that phone number out there. Do you have something else you want to add?
We still have plenty of newsletters. If people need to be educated, by all means, we want to get you educated, but then do something with the education. Don't just sit there and stare at it, but make sure you read it and then take action, because there's nothing worse than having an education and not using it. But if you like, we have free newsletters on the right to own gold, how to stop the New World Order, Harry Figge's report on the economy. We're more than happy to send these out. They're free of cost, free of charge, and you're certainly not under any obligation. But if you're needing that, please give us a call. We'd be more than happy to get those out to you right away.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. How's Jonathan?
He's doing great. He's growing like a weed.
Is he talking yet?
Oh, well, if you can consider when he cries for his bottle, talk. But that's his only form of communication at this point. But he certainly knows how to get his point across when he's hungry.
If you understand it, he's talking.
Yeah.
Take care, my friend.
Thank you.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Okay, folks, once again, 1-800-289-2646. 1-800-289-2646. Ask for Gene Miller. Mention my name, William Cooper. Tell him that you listen to the hour of the time. And for those of you outside the continental limits of the United States of America, you can call 602-953-6000. That's 602-953-6000. Take it away.
a prevarication. It wasn't true. They said it was high class, but that was just a lie. You know, you ain't never caught a rabbit and you ain't no friend. Come on back here. Oh. We're leaving. I wasn't just going to leave because there's two more verses here.
Yeah, come on back, Tom Valentine. Come on back, Tom. Listen to this song. No, don't pout. Come on. Come on, Tom Valentine. Come on back and listen.
They said you were high class. Well, that was just a lie. They said you were high class. Well, that was just a lie. You know you ain't never caught a rabbit and you ain't no friend of mine. You ain't nothing but a hound dog. Crying all the time.
Come on, Tom. Show us your fruits. Show us your fruits, Tom. And good evening, if you're still there.
I'm here.
You're on the hour of the time. Hello?
Hello.
You're on the air.
Okay. How you doing, Bill?
Fine.
Great to be back on again.
Who's this?
Ken.
Oh, hi, Ken. Fantastico. What are we going to talk about tonight?
Oh, first I'd like to thank everybody out there that's listening. The response has been absolutely overwhelming. And my definition, life for a stranger, has always been a friend I have not met yet. And I met an awful lot of nice people via the phone from the last time being on the airways and through letters that were written, and I will respond to each and every one of them as quickly as possible.
Well, you know, the feedback I got is everybody out there just loved you. And they really, really opened their eyes from what you had to say. They began looking at their ordinary, everyday possessions in a whole new light.
Well, that's great. That's what my program is intended for. And if I could answer just one person's letter, it said that they requested info on my survival skills, which I'm more happy to send to them. And the question was, why do you think we will need such skills? And the answer is, people need these skills each and every day of their lives because they don't ever know what's going to happen with the weather or anything else that goes on that could possibly be a national disaster, whether it's weather or whatever. And from hurricanes to earthquakes to tornadoes to flash flooding to avalanches, you name it, these skills could possibly save someone's life. And I just wanted to make clear that I'm not on any kind of political bandwagon. I do not work on fear or intimidation of anyone. I'm just here to be of service to my fellow man.
Wonderful. What are we going to talk about tonight?
Just quickly, I'd like to talk about cigarettes.
Okay.
You know, everybody's told that cigarettes are bad for your health and that you shouldn't smoke, so please keep that in mind in case you're a non-smoker. And if you're a smoker, here's some other things that you can simply do with a pack of cigarettes. And a lot of my flyers that go out, I use the word survival, and I break it down to simply unlock your restrictive viewpoint into visual awareness of life. Well, if you smoke enough cigarettes, eventually they may kill you. But on the other hand, if you always look at the other side of the coin, cigarettes can also save your life by simply using them if you have them that come in a box container or even if they're a soft pack. You have 20 magic lights, little fire sticks right there, a pack of cigarettes, because they're usually dry all the time, and you always need a pack of matches or a lighter to get one going with, so that you break them in half, now you have 20 to 40 little magic logs within your possession. So that's your kindling for starting a fire with.
They'll burn for quite a while, won't they?
They will, and that's all you need with other wood or paper or fuzz in your pockets. Whatever available that is burnable to get a decent sized fire going, to give you warmth, to be able to cook your food on, to boil your water with, to have light with. If you're lucky enough to have the kind that have the filter on them. If you just look and think of the word filter, you can use that filter to stick inside of possibly a pen if need be, a hollow tube or rod. Maybe it's your fishing rod that's graphite that's hollow and you have to break it in half. So you can stuff some cigarette filters into it, and now you have the means to start purifying water if it's stagnant. If you don't have any kind of first aid on you, you can also use those filters for small compresses or to use as your band-aids. You can also use the filter broken down for aerodynamics if you need to make a blowgun from toothpicks, twigs, needles, or pins that you may have in a sewing kit, cactus needles if you're in the right terrain or area. They can also be used for fishing flies to make your own lures with. Then you can use the container itself to collect nuts and berries in. And if you're really thirsty and you forgot to take your canteen or your drinking cup with you, you can slide the plastic cellophane wrapper off and it will hold just about a cup of water. So there's your portable canteen and a means to collect water, which you may want to use your driver's license or anything else that's plastic to scrape moisture off the plants around you. And if you had all that fun, mostly all cigarette packs have aluminum foil in there for your protection, which you can then use as a signal there if and when you'd like to be rescued.
You know, you forgot something, Ken.
What's that? Oh, you can smoke them.
You can smoke them, too. But when I was in the Air Force, we used to have earplugs when we went out on the flight line to work on the B-52 bombers, which is what I worked on, in KC-135 refueling type aircraft. And if I forgot my earplugs, I would use the filters from a Marlboro, and it worked just fine. So you can use those for earplugs, too.
That's absolutely true. And I'm sure there's a lot more, but those are just some suggested items from my imagination, the way that I view the world and everything around it, that could be useful to you in any given time, moment, or situation. I also like to relate things to nature and hunting, and if you were out in the woods and you were a hunter, we find it so easy to kill these days everything and anything, but if you only had one shot left in a rifle and you were sitting there and some squirrel happened by, you'd have to make a decision on whether to shoot it so you could keep eating or to do other things with it. But maybe you just want to take the time to observe the squirrel and where it lives and where it's running and hiding its nuts or digging up its nuts, so instead of eating him, you can share his food. And then you can break down that one last bullet that you have and use the gunpowder to start yourself a fire with. You can use the lead from it to possibly sit and write your notes of the day on something with. You can use the casing itself, since everything would be taken out of it, as a distress whistle if you needed to signal for help and you couldn't yell.
Those make good earplugs, too.
Big shirt stuff. And if there's any other animals in the area, too, they're curious, and they will sit up and pay attention to the loudness of the whistle. And then you may just want to break down that rifle and use the barrel for a blowgun later if you needed to, or to use it to tap into a tree to get the sap out of it so you have something else to drink and eat. Maybe you want to use the leather strap or nylon strap to take apart and use that to build a comfortable lean-to with, or use some of the stock and put in, use that to start a fire with.
Ken, it just occurred to me, we may have some listeners out there tonight who did not hear the show with you last week. Why don't you tell our listeners again just who you are and what you do, just in case some people out there are scratching their heads and wonder what this is all about.
Okay. What I do is I put together a program called In Plain View Survival Training. And what it allows people to do is become self-reliant and self-sufficient and self-empowered with every day normal things that have always been right there in front of them, but no one has ever showed them how to use it for anything more than what they've purchased it for. And what I teach in an 8-hour course is I cover city, street, car, home, everyday clothing, and how you can use everything from the top of your head to tip to your toes, land, sea, air, and wilderness survival, so that people can move freely and feel comfortable and enjoy life more wherever they go.
A lot of people have actually died in inclement weather, lost in snowstorms and avalanches, or out in, on the water, or in the water, simply because they didn't understand that they had the elements of their survival on their person at the time and could have survived without any injury, any frostbite, or any problems whatsoever if they had only attended one of your seminars.
This is again why I have put this program together, and the response that I'm getting, it's definitely fulfilled my dream, because I'm living my life's dream and doing this, and now being able to pass it on to each and every individual that is interested in it, because no one has ever taken the time to show really anyone. And in times of emergency, whether it's the weather, with hurricanes, you always see people running at the last minute to buy batteries and candles and everything that they should already have in their home, for a state of preparedness for themselves in case of a disaster, and it's wait till last minute and cause more havoc for themselves and those around them.
Cause more disaster, huh?
Absolutely.
You did something interesting with this word survival that I like an awful lot. He took the word survival and just printed the letters vertically, and then he added letters to each letter. And the way it comes out is simply unlock your restrictive viewpoints into a visual awareness of life. And it's so true. When I stood there in Denver, Colorado, at the Coliseum, watching Ken go through his paces time after time after time with hundreds of people, I was amazed at how blind we all are. I had no idea what the clothing and the belt and the shoes and the things that I had on me right then and there was actually capable of. I had some idea because in the Navy we were taught to use every piece of naval clothing for a specific purpose. And of course, being narrow-minded humans that we are, we don't carry that over into civilian life and really think about those things, except for some rare people like Ken. You were in the Navy, weren't you, Ken?
Yes.
And you actually started off with these kinds of ideas from your Navy training, according to what you told me before. Is that correct?
Yes, that is. And that's where I was able to really teach myself more than I had taught when I was younger, because I was always playing and being creative and imaginative with everything that I had as a child, because we didn't have the type of toys that children have available to them today. So you really had to kind of use your imagination. And when people would go camping and that, they just basically pull their portable home along with them. And I was looking out in nature to find everything that has always been there for us to use, and creating my own little world and my own little lean-tos and tents and campsites, and to have a better time and get close with nature and to find out just what I was all about.
Uh-huh. I think that's wonderful. I sort of went through the same kind of childhood. The toys that we had were in the Sears catalog, and that's where they stayed. We got a lot of clothing and shoes out of there, but none of the toys ever made it to our house. Instead, our mom would give us cigar boxes and empty spools from her sewing machine and sticks, and we'd build all kinds of things. But, you know, the imagination sort of dies with childhood in this world, and of course, children who live in the city don't have a chance to really exercise that. What would you recommend for people who grew up in the city and really didn't get that close to nature, Ken?
Take the time to spend either with yourself or with the child, and just take that leisurely ride on a Sunday or whatever time you may have available, and go out to the country.
Ken, there's people who've never left Manhattan Island in their entire life, and they're listening to this show right now.
Well, I suggest they spend two good dollars and fill up the gas tank, no matter what the prices are today, and just go out and get away from it all, and start to think clearly and start to look around at everything that was put here for them to enjoy from the start.
Now, in a real severe snowstorm, they could die just as easily in the streets of New York City as they could in the tundra of the Antarctic, couldn't they?
Right there in the, within their own home. If all heat was shut off, all electric was shut off, all water supply was shut off, this happens every day, every winter.
Yeah.
Utilities are cut off because they can't pay their bills, and they have the capability and the means to live just as comfortably without all of the, quote, conveniences that they have available to them.
And that's the key, because man always did before man got these conveniences, didn't he?
Yes.
All right. Okay, go ahead. I just want to drive a few points home to make people out there understand that this isn't just for people who live in the country, it's for everybody. What you have to offer is valuable and could save anybody's life, no matter where they live or who they are or what they do.
This is true. I'm just one man, and right now I seem to make a difference in the world, and I'm not anybody special. I'm just like everybody else out there, but I took the time because it was something that I enjoyed and something that I had a real interest in, to educate myself on as much as possible. A lot of the stuff that I teach and do is because I have used myself as a guinea pig to experiment on it, to find out exactly how things work and why. I took the time to ask the question, why?
Okay. What else can we get into that can help our friends at home learn how to survive when things don't go the way we want them to?
If most homes, every home has a restroom, and everybody uses toilet paper, I'd hope. If not, other items are available to them, all the way down to the denominations in their pockets, that they could use for toilet paper. But the toilet paper roll itself, once it's done, this program also helps people to save money and to recycle and use everything that they would normally throw out because it's not used up yet. A roll of toilet paper, taken simply, keep that toilet paper roll. If you're using a washer and dryer in your home, things that are called lint and fuzz collect in your dryer that you need to clean out. Instead of throwing it into the garbage, just put that above the ledge where you're doing your laundry and stuff it as tightly as you can into the roll of toilet paper. And if you have leftover birthday candles or candles from Halloween or candles from Christmas or anything else, you can heat up that excess wax in a tin pan on your stove and pour some of it into the toilet paper roll, and you've just created inexpensively, because you've already bought and paid for it, your own little fire log for your fireplace or your cooking grill. If you don't have that, you still want some heat in your house. If people have coffee cans or any kind of can, food would come in and they save them, then they can make their own little Sterno can to keep cooking on, and to have heat and warmth and light in their home if everything else was shut off.
Well, Ken, hate to do this, but we got to take a short little break right now while I turn this tape over. So just hang loose. We'll be right back after this very short pause. And everybody out there wants to walk like you and talk like you. So let's hear some more, Ken.
In referring back to the letter that...
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to fluster you like that. I know you're not used to this kind of thing, but go ahead. We love you.
Okay. I was putting all my thoughts together for today, and there's so many things that I would really want to cover, and I know that time is short, so I want to make the most of everyone's time. You can always get more money, but you can't get more time.
That's true.
lot of people requested videos, they requested cassette tapes and booklets and everything else. I've just completed a booklet, and as I say again, I'm only a one-man show, so anyone that would like to give me backing or donations or funding, I'd be more than willing to accept that so I can be give more of myself to the people that are listening. The booklet that I've just completed, it's 12 to 14 pages, which is condensed into four full pages, and in that I cover survival, the most eight important steps of survival, the five priority lists that everybody should have, and I'll give that out to everyone right now, the most important items that everybody could possibly carry on their person at one time is a multi-purpose pocket knife of any size, a compass and a thermometer, a lighter or pack of matches, a small flashlight, preferably small AAA batteries, and most important, always carry with you a peace of mind. And I go into methods of purifying water, where you can find water sources with, from within your home to outside, suggested areas for city survival, and where you can find information, food, clothing, and shelter. A good-to-go bag is what I call it and what I teach in my classes, and it lists over 50 items that are vital to your survival up to 30 days and what to put in it. And at the base of that, I always say to keep with you a good sense of humor, trust in your own awareness, guidance, and knowingness. I also have the basic first aid kit for the home or for your car. I talk about homemade fuel sources, wild edible food tips. I have another section in there which covers awareness and being aware. And awareness is having the knowledge and being mindful, being informed, being alert, being watchful. Awareness is knowledge, and knowledge is power.
You mean sheeple can't do this?
I guess not.
This is not for sheeple. Okay. Go ahead. My audience is not sheeple, I can guarantee it. Sheeple.
The exercise is to develop a great awareness. I also have a method of seed sprouting in there. And I also do scenarios, home scenarios and car scenarios in my seminar, and I list the most 25 most important things that someone can use if they had to vacate their car inside of 2 minutes, and what they can actually rip off, tear off, take from their vehicle to keep moving and to keep surviving with. And that is in my four-page booklet. A lot of people call with questions on what should I do if I'm going overseas or traveling, and what do I need to look for, or what should I carry.
You know, Ken, that's a good question. A lot of people go overseas without even thinking that it might be different than the place that they left.
And they need to actually look into the area that they're going to. A lot of things just revolve around human relations. Everybody seems to have this plastic bubble that they don't want anyone to break or get close to. And something else that we've gotten away from over the years is being kind to one another and reaching a hand out and saying hello, or offering a cigarette to someone was a gesture of breaking the barriers between two people. Maybe it may be a stick of gum today. And talking to people in general.
That's so true. And having been in two branches of the military service, and having been overseas, in fact, I, as a child, I was raised in foreign countries. One of the most rewarding experiences is getting to be friends with the people in the country that you visit and learning about their country and their customs and their ways. And it's an awful, awful lot of fun.
It absolutely is. In my 8 steps on survival, one of the 8 steps is being able to vanquish fear and panic and to act like the natives, and to find out about their culture and be open-minded to it so you can understand them and how they live. And that way people can appreciate what other people do for a living.
Many Americans don't understand that when they leave this country, they're no longer protected by the laws of this country. And when they are in a foreign country, they are literally at the mercy of the people and their laws and their customs. And you can't survive if nobody likes you.
And if you don't carry yourself proudly and you don't carry yourself in awareness, always having a knowing of where you're going, or at least making it seem like you know where you're going, then you become a target for anybody that's out there that wants to take advantage of you. And that's something that you really need to keep in mind.
So what are some of the things you teach people that are going to go overseas besides these things we've just discussed? What should they take with them, Ken?
Basically, as little as possible, so they don't have a lot of stuff to lug around. If they're carrying luggage or a backpack of any kind, to always keep it within their possession, within their reach, so to speak, and don't really ask anyone to watch your property for you, because you don't know what they might be putting in your bag that they want transported back across the country that could possibly get them into trouble innocently without them knowing it. If you're staying overnight somewhere, inventory and reassess your situations before you leave to make sure that the items that you brought are the same items that are still in there, and you haven't picked up any debris, so to speak, of any kind that you don't need to be carrying with you.
One of the things I learned is when you go to a foreign country, you don't wear flashy jewelry, you don't wear expensive rings or Rolex watches on your wrist. And it depends upon the country you go to, depends upon the part of town that you're in. But you have to remember that a lot of foreign countries have a lot of poor people who turn to theft sometimes in order to survive. And you just have to be aware of that.
I'm glad that you brought that out, because this is exactly what I'm saying. Yeah, that's what I mean by acting and looking like the natives. Maybe you just may want to take some extra spending money with you and observe how people are dressed, their casualness, and move like they do and move freely about them and not be bragging who you are or where you are from, because people know how free we are in this country here and what we're allowed to do and what we're not allowed to do. So what I'm saying is, do not draw attention to yourself that you do not want to have drawn to you.
Right. Someone else's survival might be your pain.
Absolutely.
What else can we touch on, Ken? What about going to places here in the United States that someone may not be used to? For instance, and I know you've thought of this before, because we talked a little bit about it in Denver. What about somebody from the country who's never been to a big city?
If they've always been out in the country and they're coming into the big city, take the time to go to the library and read up on the city, talk to somebody else that has been there, talk to their elders that have traveled.
You know, people who live in California and in New York City don't understand that a subway can be terrifying to someone who's never been out of a small country town. And a freeway, for my wife, for instance, she just absolutely will not drive on a freeway in California. It terrifies her so much that she cannot literally react.
If they have to go alone, then they're going to have the greatest experience of their life, because it's going to be an adventure for them.
And they're going to have to overcome their fears.
They're going to have to absolutely overcome their fears. They're going to, and overcoming the word fear, that means face everything and rejoice. If you have any kind of fears, that does not mean to forget everything and run. So if you have a fear of a subway, take the time and go down and look at a subway and just take it from one stop, get off and get back on and go right back to where you came from. So you have that feeling of what it's like to be in a subway and be underground traveling. And whether it's going into skyscrapers and using elevators to flying, or being in the heart of downtown New York and you've never ever been there before, taxis, buses, familiarize yourself with bus routes when you get into an area, familiarize yourself with local hospital numbers, police information that is available to you. A phone book is probably your best source of information in any city across the country, because there's all the help you need within a phone book, and there's maps at the back of phone books. So you won't be lost. You'll only be temporarily, as I call it, displaced until you familiarize yourself with your surroundings.
Ken, you know, I went home the other day and I asked Carolyn and Annie and Pooh, I said, What would you do if all of a sudden the water was shut off and you went to every tap in the house and you turned it on and there was no water, and you went to the neighbors and there was no water, there's just no water anywhere, and you came back home and you're sitting there and you're thirsty? What would you do? And nobody knew what to do. And the only reason I knew what to do, I probably would have thought of it after a while, but I knew because you were telling me how to get water in Denver. And what's the answer to that?
If you're within your home and you go to your taps and it all of a sudden is shut off because maybe a main line broke, if you go to your refrigerator, you can take everything out of it and defrost the refrigerator freezer because there's water in ice and ice trays. You can drain your hot water lines from your hot water tank. You can use the water in the toilet tanks as long as there's no 1001 flushes or any other kind of chemicals that are in there to make your...
Dude, water in the toilet tank. I know there's some people out there doing that right now. I know they are.
All those that are, please raise your hand.
Why is it okay to drink the water out of the toilet tank?
Because the water in the toilet tank in most cities anywhere is clean to a certain extent, but all you would have to do is boil it. And it does go through the water purification plants and systems.
In other words, it's the same water that comes right out of the tap.
Absolutely.
And it's in a tank in which there are no pollutants unless you put some pollutants in there yourself.
Or if your tank is old, you may have some rust in there, so you don't want to drink rust and end up getting lockjaw.
Yeah, and you might have a little bit of some kind of a plant growth in there. I've seen some algae growing on the edges of toilet tanks. But basically, there's no reason why someone could not use that water.
Correct. And all that they have to do, again, to purify it is boil it. That's the simplest, easiest method, which has been done for centuries, to purify water, is just boiling it. To do that, you need to boil it for 5 to 10 minutes vigorously at a high rate. And if you want it to taste better, depends on the pan that you're boiling it in, is to pour it from one pan to another. And this will get that metal, aluminum taste out of it, but it will be drinkable.
Country people get a large wooden barrel and put it under one of the eaves of the house and where rainwater drains, and they'll allow rainwater to accumulate in that barrel, and they'll put a lid on it during the hot months so that the water doesn't evaporate, just in case. And there's no reason why you can't do that anywhere else.
No, it depends on what time of year it is. If you're watering your lawn and you're the type of person that just shuts it off and you don't disconnect it and drain it, you may have 150 foot of garden hose out there, and all you have to do is walk it down and drain it into a bucket, and you have your water right there.
Now,
garden hose.
How could you cook food if you didn't have any means of making a fire, if you didn't have any fuel? Anything. You had the food, you had a container to put it in, but you got no possible way to make a fire, no source of heat except the source up above that God gave us, the sun. What would you do?
Well, if that's all you had was the sun, then you can, I'm sure, have newspaper, telephone book, any kind of burnable materials. And if it's a sunny day and you have the luxuries of a magnifying glass, you can start a fire with a magnifying glass. If you didn't have that, I'm sure everybody's got flashlights in their homes and batteries. And people have steel wool usually to scour their pans with and everything else. Well, this is called an electrical fire. All you need to do, whether it's a size C battery or D battery, as long as there's juice in it, all you have to do is touch the positive to the negative portion of the battery, and as soon as one connects with the other, you will see it spark up, and just blow on it, and it will burst into a flame. And then you can add wood, paper, whatever else you have available, and put that in maybe an extra pan if you didn't have a coffee can. Or you might want to take the hubcap off your car so you have something to cook in if you didn't have a cooking grill, and you got fire that way. If not, once again, everybody's got toilet paper in their house, and if people are interested in first aid, I'm sure they have rubbing alcohol in their house. If they were to remove the cardboard tube from the toilet paper roll and put it into a can of reasonable size of the diameter of the toilet paper and pour the rubbing alcohol into it, only if it was a cup full, and light it. You'll have heat, warmth, and light to do all your cooking on. But when you're doing anything in the home, please make sure you have the proper ventilation.
And also make sure you put your fire in something that doesn't burn.
The house down. Or you'll be really warm.
Right.
But it's right there. It's been on their shelves. They've been looking at it and throwing things out and not realizing that there's more use for it than what you initially bought it for. But it will burn a long time, too, the rubbing alcohol on top of toilet paper in a coffee can. Even if it was a pop can that you had to take the top off of and put as much toilet paper rolled up as you could into it and pour it. Once again, you now have a Sterno can that will give you heat, warmth, and light.
And it lasts quite a while, doesn't it?
Yes, it will. I say in my booklet, one cup of rubbing alcohol in that coffee can situation will burn for about 1 hour. The whole bottle may give you several days of heat, warmth, and cooking availability. A lot of people say, Ken, why do you want to give out all this information over the radio or the people that you talk to? Well, this is 25 years of experience, and I'm just scratching the surface. I cannot possibly give everybody everything within this short time period.
Yeah, believe me, he is just scratching the surface. His normal seminar is 8 hours, and he's just talking about what you're wearing and what's in your car and what's in your home and how to survive with those things. And he doesn't just talk about it. I mean, he demonstrates, shows you, lets you get your hands on it and all kinds of things. It's just marvelous. He held me spellbound for several days up there in Denver. His booth was right next to ours, and when I wasn't busy, I was over there watching Ken, believe me. And Willie White, well, I said this on the last show, but, well, there might be somebody else out there that doesn't know about it. Willie Whitefeather taught, too, how to build a fire using a piece of wood and two pieces of wood and a piece of string. And
again, that's called a bow drill. And even if you don't have a piece of string and all you have is one stick, that's possibly the length of your arms, and you have the second stick that you'd want to put a little notch into, which it would be a V, and just spit on your hands or have some gloves and start at the top of that stick, and by rubbing it rapidly back and forth together from top to bottom, putting pressure into the stick that you're spinning it on, you'll create enough friction heat to start a spark onto some small kindling, whether it's tree branches or leaves or paper or fuzz or whatever, to blow on that. And that's the old motto of where there's smoke, there's fire, and you can make your own fire that way.
Ken, you know, on the last show, we talked about that young couple that went out in their car and got stuck in a snowstorm on a deserted road, and it was days before they found the car, and then more days before they found them, and they were so concerned about saving the baby that they ended up losing both of them lost portions of their feet and legs due to freezing. Why is it a mistake? Why is it a mistake to devote so much of your attention in cold weather to trying to save a baby? Don't tell me I stumped you.
Yeah, well, no, you didn't.
I didn't mean to.
Save the attention to save a baby. The simple fact of that matter is the baby was basically left unharmed. The mother nurtured it and gave it some water, but the child was never taught fear. The child, being only 3 to 5 months old, if I remember.
Yeah, that's correct.
Thing about death, and it was a life-functioning system that was in existence. Nothing affected it. But your mind affects you in every single thing that you do. The father said that he did not give up because of the love for his wife and daughter, and that is admirable, but he was not ready to die. He had the will to live, the will to survive, and that's what it takes. Once you give up, once you decide that you're in a situation that you're going to die, then you just told your mind and you just decided that that is the next process for you.
Yeah, you've resigned yourself to it.
Yes. And And what people need to realize, from the time you took your first breath and was smacked on your backside and came into the world, you are already started to die. We are dying every single day. It's a natural process. That's what you're born to do. You are born to die, because none of us are immortal that I know of. And it's what you do between point A and B is all that matters.
Well, believe me, from my life, I don't know why anybody would ever want to be immortal. It's a good life while you live it, but sooner or later, I don't want to be here anymore when I reach a certain point. Do you?
Apparently not. No, I don't think so. People that are afraid to die are those who have not yet lived.
That's right. Ken, isn't it a fact that babies are covered with a thick layer of fat, and that they could actually go longer without food and water and experience colder weather than adult human beings can and survive?
Yes, they can. And that's also true of people that are heavier. They'll last longer because of the fat-covering tissue on them.
Plus, they have a built-in supply of food.
Yes. People think that they gain so much weight during the winter because of all the holidays and all the food. Just like the animals out there, you naturally gain maybe 5 to 10 pounds of winter weight, winter fat, to protect yourself from the cold.
Uh-huh.
And that's something that people don't realize. It's not all the partying that you're doing and that. Your body will naturally retain more of it. The other myth that people say is you better put a coat on because you'll go outside and catch a cold. You'll not catch a cold unless someone has given you the virus and has coughed and sneezed and hacked all over you. You will get cold, but you will not catch a cold. So you need to regulate your own body heat.
Well, once again, you've certainly opened everyone's eyes. And you got any little really neat goodies you want to close out with here, Ken?
I would just like to thank anyone that's within the listening area, and I'd like to thank those that called from overseas. It touched my heart, and my heart goes out to you, and this comes from the heart, that if anybody has any questions whatsoever or needs any information whatsoever, please feel free, night or day, to contact me at area code 303-666-4601. Or write to 1560 Bedivere Circle. Bedivere is spelled B as in boy, E as in Ed, D as in David, I as in Indian, Victor Edward Richard Edward Circle, Lafayette, Colorado, 80026. And it'd be my pleasure to answer your questions.
Well, Ken, you found out how many people listen to this program, didn't you?
Yes. it's overwhelming. And I am very grateful for the opportunity to speak once again to the people that listen to your show.
Well, Ken, speaking for all of us here, and for I know I'm speaking for all of the good, loyal listeners to the Hour of the Time, we thank you for sharing this information with us. I know, and they know, that you certainly don't have to do this. And I think the greatest help that you've been to all of our people around the world is that it's taught them to look at ordinary, everyday things that they take for granted in a different light. And if that helps save their lives, then you've done all of us a wonderful service.
A lot of people call and say, well, how many people do I need for a seminar? How many people do you have to do this?
One.
Just one. Just one person. I've traveled literally 2,000 miles one way and have done the whole 8-hour seminar just for one person, because I believe that that person could not only help themselves but anyone else that may be around them or involved in any type of situation that they may find themselves in. And that is more than gratifying for me that I've been able to pass that on to someone else instead of keeping all this to myself. And as long as you listen and hear and listen, then you have the best recording system, which is your ears, and the best computer system, which is your own brain, and you can tap into that anytime and retain and pull out this information when and where you need it.
Well, once again, I want to thank you, Ken. We're out of time. God bless you. God bless your family. And if you get a chance, have a little Kate call and talk to Pooh sometime. Probably in the evening would be the best. And for all of you out there, I hope that this has really helped you. I know that it has, for those of you who really pay attention. And please call Ken and talk to him, 303-666-4601. That's 303-666-4601. For those of you who are listening to Tom Valentine tonight, you heard him tell a blatant, barefaced lie. And if he wants to sue me for this statement, we'll round up all the witnesses who were on the Capitol steps in Washington, D.C. We will meet him in a court of law, and we will expose his lie to the world. Now, if all you sheeple want to continue to think that there's nobody out there that can keep you running around in circles, chasing your own tail while they bring this country down around our ears, then you better think again. Because you are setting yourself up for a big fall, and you may be the biggest fools of all. Good night, and God bless you.